Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast. I'm Alison Perry, and you're listening to episode 11. Welcome back. Today, my guests are Fenella and Alice from the Step Up Club, which they created when they realised that unless women work in the corporate world, they quite often don't have access to career support and networking opportunities. Their book Step Up was published in 2016 by Penguin, and they run lots of events for women. And they recently launched the Step Up School, which is a year-long programme designed to help women grow their career and enhance their lives. They are hugely inspiring, and we talked loads about confidence, whether you should fake it, how to find inner confidence when you're having a wobble, and why women seem to suffer from a lack of confidence much more than men seem to. So I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. Welcome, Fenella and Alice, to the podcast. So you guys run Step Up Club. Do you want to kick off by telling me a little bit about Step Up Club?
Yeah, sure. So we set up the Step Up Club 2 years ago now, but we've really kind of been going at it hammer and tooth for the last year. We wrote our book, which is called Step Up, Confidence, Success and Your Stellar Career in 10 Minutes a Day. And the whole reason for setting up the Step Up Club, for writing the book, and now for doing our events and our blog and all our social channels is to modernise the conversation around women's careers. We feel very strongly that number one, we should be talking about careers in this, with the same passion and style and enthusiasm that we do about food and wellness. And number two, that you can take career development out of the boardroom and put it somewhere kind of modern and engaging and fun sometimes, and, you know, emotional and all those things, because work and life are so inextricably linked. And so we feel that we are changing that conversation and really energising the women's career movement.
It's so true, though, isn't it? Like, even from a young age, we were all kind of taught, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? What is your job? You know, and it all feels very serious and very, you know, like something you have to really work to, and you do have to work towards it, but you're right, we don't approach it in the same way as we do, you know, health and well-being and all those sort of things. That's really interesting. So you guys, I guess, pinpointed that there was a bit of a gap in the market with all of this.
Yeah, so we knew that there was a need for practical skills. People want to feel more confident, they want to expand their network, they want to progress their career, whatever that might look like. But we also knew that there was this emotional need that Alice is talking about, where women want to feel empowered in their careers and think that their careers are cool and that it's a great thing to talk about, and also come together in some kind of forum that isn't an industry networking event, because obviously we all have access to those, but you have to present yourself in a certain way, you can't be that free. So we thought, you know, let's come together and do something about this. So we came up with the idea of events where women could come together. They would get our practical skills. We're careers experts, but they would also get to network with each other. And because we know that everybody is busy, we're super busy. We know you're super busy. And this is, I think, you know, talking about this on a motherhood podcast, this is particularly apt for parents. We know that people are busy, so we want to give people things that are actually achievable in a small amount of time, not something that's like you have to expand your network and you think, I can never do that. So we, you know, because I just don't have time, we could say, actually, if you just spend 10 minutes a day on these things, with these, what we call career workouts, these really achievable things, then you will make a significant difference in your career. So that was kind of the starting point. And then from that has come the book, the blog, our social media, lots of big brand collaborations, which I think we're gonna, I know we're going to talk
yes,
about.
So
I can see your questions to talk about later. Yes. And also our Step Up School, which is our newest venture.
So that's launching this month, isn't it?
It launched on Tuesday.
Oh, it's already launched. And did it sell out really quickly?
So we actually sold out in June, I think, is when we released the spaces. And it sold, we had 40 spaces. And this was an idea that we came up with between us, but also talking to women who come to our events and who were asking for something more in depth.
Apologies.
Don't mind.
My tea went round down the wrong way.
This is very real.
It's a very nice cup of tea, but yes, I inhaled it rather than swallowing it. Sorry, yes, you were saying.
So we were talking to our Step Up members informally about what they wanted, and they were saying that they would like something more in depth, a kind of strung together programme of all of our different events that we hold. So we thought about doing something new and aimed. We originally thought it would be aimed at kind of freelancers and entrepreneurs because we actually do it in the day, so it's a 10 till 1 slot. A lot of our events are in the evening. But actually, we were surprised to find that quite a few of our Step Up students have taken time out of their kind of day work, 9-to-5 jobs to come as well. So it's a real mix of women. And the idea is we take them through a year-long programme that starts with defining their success and takes them through kind of building confidence and brand you and all the pillars of Step Up as a whole, but this very closed 40 women, and that we are giving them not only the skills and the space to think about their career with a kind of different type of perspective, like we were saying before, but also this immediate network.
Actually,
it was brilliant. We asked them to introduce themselves and tell us something funny about themselves, and one of them said, I'm day two into my new career and I'm doing really well because I've suddenly got this massive new network. And it was true. Like, it was like they literally arrived. We actually had a launch party a couple of weeks ago where we got to meet them, and they all seemed like really nice women. But it was just, they kind of arrived and there was just this really good feeling. Everyone had made the choice to be there. It wasn't like their company had sent them, and maybe there was a bit of apathy and people were a bit kind of suspicious of what was going to happen. They'd all really made this commitment themselves, and there was this great feeling of just moving into something new and exciting.
So, that's amazing. Yeah, like, even just hearing you talking about it, I feel excited. Like, I'm a bit envious that I missed out.
Well, don't worry.
No, you don't need to be. You don't need to be, because we are launching another round. So this is obviously being held in London. This is face-to-face with us kind of delivering and supporting and coaching. Mm. But we're running another round in January for another 40 women, which will be launching on the 1st of November. We'll be letting people sign up. We did sell out in,
five hours.
Yeah, 5 hours
last
time.
Like Glastonbury. So, people are going
to
be there.
You have to be.
Less money.
This sounds like a massive selfish sales pitch, but basically, you have to be in our newsletter because last time it sold out to our newsletter.
Right.
So if people subscribe to our newsletter, we always send out everything in there first. Plus, there's loads of other interesting stuff. But if they're on there, they'll get the information and then you can sign up. And then next year, we're going to be launching it online. So if you're not in London, you will be able to access it as well.
So they can subscribe by going to, is it stepupclub.com?
It's, unfortunately not.
Oh.
It's we wish it was.
Sorry.
It's step-up-club.net.
Okay.
And you can also find it by Googling the Step Up Club.
Yes, excellent. It sounds amazing. I'm just,
Thank you.
Just feels like you guys are just doing such brilliant, empowering work, and it's so needed. So how does all of this work that you guys are doing for the Step Up Club, how does that fit in with your own family lives?
Well, it fits in quite well, actually, thanks for asking. I think if you'd asked us this time last year, we might not have said the same answer, because I don't know if you know, but we come from very different careers originally. So Finella is an ex-corporate lawyer and fund manager and from the corporate world, and I'm a journalist, and we are old friends. And when we started, I mean, the Step Up Club, the growth of the Step Up Club has been very organic. And while we've got a goal, which is kind of launching Step Up School online and just continuing to grow and spread our message, it has been a kind of slow development, mainly because we've had careers on the other side. And we feel very strongly that we will be keeping those careers. So I still freelance write, and Finella still coaches people.
Okay.
But actually, this time last year, the balance,
we were doing a lot of other work
and a lot of Step Up stuff. Our book had just launched. Obviously, we've got five kids and two husbands between us. So it was, it wasn't particularly enjoyable last year, and it didn't feel like we had any type of balance. And actually, yeah. Step Up was stressful because it was the extra thing. We both had commitments. I was at Red Magazine. Fenella had a lot of coaching to do, and we had commitments and pressure from other points. And it really felt like we were kind of doing Step Up on the side, but it was where our heart was. Whereas now I've scaled back my journalism, and Fenella's scaled back her coaching, and it feels like we have a lot more time, a lot more breathing space. Our children have kind of moved into a different school year, all of them, and that's kind of helping to sort itself out as well. So I feel like we do work really hard on it, and we think about it all the time, but we also have a nice, you know, we both pick up our children often from school most days, and we respect that in each other, and we have similar values in that way. So I think that it's not like one of us is wanting to work, you know, 12-hour days every single day and the other one doesn't. I think we approach it in a very similar way, which means that there isn't any stress on that front. So while we have very busy times, it's always something that's shared.
Yeah, we do. I think that's really, you know, people always say, talk about partnership a lot when they're talking to us, and I think that's something that is really overlooked when people are first getting together. But, you know, yes, you need to have the same vision for your business, but you also need to have a similar vision for your life, and that we've never had an issue where like one of us wants to work and the other one doesn't want to work, or one of us feels that that they're doing more, like we never have issues like that. And that's really important because we both are very ambitious and really value our careers, but also really want to spend time with our families. So but that's not to say that sometimes we don't have a lot of work to do, or we don't work evenings. We do, but we're quite managed about it.
That's good. So confidence, which is something that you guys focused on with your Women Who Can campaign with Karen Millen, didn't you?
Yeah.
Why do you think that women suffer, so many women suffer from a lack of confidence?
So there is conflicting research on this. I always talk about research. There's conflicting research on this. So there is some research that says that it's actually more of a self-report issue. So women are more likely to talk about the fact or be more open that they aren't confident about something, whereas men are less likely to admit that.
That's interesting.
But there's also a lot of research that says that actually women do feel less confident. And so whilst you can't categorically say that women are less confident, we do experience women as being generally or feeling less confident, and certainly we vocalise that a lot more. There are quite a few reasons we believe that it starts in childhood. You know, we're often bringing up young girls, I think less now, but it's still very, it's still inherent in our culture, and we all have unconscious biases that, you know, we can't really get over, or we can get over, but it's very difficult to get over those. That, you know, oh, you know, you're such a good girl, oh, you played so nicely, or yeah, well done, you know, well done, boy, you climbed that tree, and you're like really muddy, and actually it's really hard to get over that. Or, you know, a little girl comes to your house and you say, oh, you've got such a pretty dress on, and the boy comes to your house and say, wow, you've got really tall.
I do that all the time, and I am like so down with, you know, equality and trying to bring my daughter up, you know, in the same way that I would bring up a boy, but it's so ingrained in us, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really hard. And, you know, difference is great, but you know, and we're not saying that men and women or boys and girls are exactly the same, but it's really important to understand that when girls perceive that the only way to get validation is by being perfect, they start to become very hard on themselves, and that decreases confidence. So what you find is that with young girls, so there's some band bossy statistics, you know, the Sheryl Sandberg campaign that came out of Lean In. There's some band bossy statistics around confidence in young girls, and I can't remember the exact statistics, but it's something like at age 8 girls and boys are equally confident, but by the age of 11 girls are 60% less confident than boys. So it's something around early adolescence and childhood, and then it kind of just continues. I think
also our physical presence is much smaller, and especially if you're working in a very male dominated industry, that can affect your confidence and how you're perceived by others, and it becomes a vicious cycle. If you feel like you don't have the same presence, then you act in a certain way and people then respond to you in that way, and it becomes a negative cycle.
And we try and make ourselves smaller sometimes, don't we?
Yeah, and also comparing ourselves to others, you know, something that I think women naturally do because we are more emotional beings and we're more aware of people in a kind of way that men might not be. And just to point out that we never kind of pit men against women, and we say that kind of at the beginning of the book, and we, a lot of people assume that we're kind of these, I mean, we are feminists, but what we do is about empowering women. It's not about saying women are like this and men are like this, and that there is a sliding scale. But when it comes to confidence, I think there are certain quirks about us as women that makes us more vulnerable to feeling less confident. And I think comparing ourselves to others is a really big one. And also that voice inside your head, that mental ticker tape that ticks through and that can challenge your thoughts. And we overthink, and it makes us amazing and unique and empathetic, and all the things that make us brilliant can actually bring us down as well, overthinking things. I mean, there were, at Step Up School, we were walking around the room and chatting to people while they were doing their exercises. And the number of times I heard someone say, I'm not a confident person. And actually, if you challenge them and you say, well, nobody is a confident person. It's not something you're born with. It's not, we say often, it's not a personality trait. Confidence is a state of mind. And actually, if you can even just deliver that piece of information to someone, it's hugely liberating, because don't label yourself as confident or not confident. We all have different types of confidence that shows itself in different ways at different times of the day. We can have a day where you feel amazingly confident in the morning, and then something, you know, I always say that my confidence is kind of generally quite high, and I don't struggle with talking, being recorded or standing up in front of a room full of women, but then my confidence has really shallow roots, so something can just knock the wind out of my sails and suddenly I'm on the floor. But that is the nature of confidence. It's this kind of big nebulous state. But what we try to do is help people understand that, which is stage one, and then give women tools to become confident enough when they need to be confident, when they need to feel confident, whether that's in a negotiation circumstance, whether that's standing up, whether that's asking for a pay, you know, whatever it is, that's what we see, is not trying to make someone a really, really confident person, but giving them the skills so that they can feel confident when they need to.
And what about faking confidence? Because I'm actually, whether it's right or not, I'm a big believer in, if I'm feeling really like wobbly, I'll just fake it and I'll pretend that I'm being really confident. But is that the wrong thing to do? Is that okay to do?
No, that's actually you know, a totally valid way to approach it. So there's two ways to build confidence. So, you know, you can become more confident generally, and there are two ways to do, and you can become more confident in specific situations, and there are two ways to do it. So one would be to do it from the inside out, and those would be you know, we've got loads of exercises in our books or that we do at our confidence events, where you can start to challenge some of those beliefs about yourself that are affecting your confidence, and start to kind of find other more positive beliefs about yourself. And there's lots that you can do in from the inside out and with your thoughts and your beliefs, but there's also things that you can do from a kind of outside in perspective, and you know, kind of faking it, they say faking it to make it, you know, fake it to make it, that's a valid way of becoming more confident. So you do it from the outside in. So something that we would often say to people is, it's not just about your behaviors and your thoughts, but it's also about your physicality, and it's about your behaviors and how other people respond to those behaviors. So if you, for example, are really worried about a particular project and you behave in a way that you're really, really worried and really unconfident about it, what people see is somebody who isn't confident about it. They will therefore behave in a way in a way that reflects the fact that they are seeing a person who's not very confident. So, okay, for example, maybe not give you that project.
Yeah.
You will read into that, oh, I wasn't very good at it. But that's not why they didn't give it to you. They didn't give it to you because you behaved as if you weren't confident about it, and they either thought you didn't want it or you couldn't cope with it.
Yeah.
If you fake it and you behave in a confident way, people see something different. They then react to you in a more positive way, and you then believe that that's because you can do it. Well, actually, it's not. It's just because of how you've behaved. So there's a kind of two-pronged approach. I think I wouldn't say just fake it all the time, because nobody wants to be inauthentic, and it'll be exhausting. But at the same time, at the right moments, that's totally valid.
I've also heard there's that thing where if you're in a stressful, or you know, if you're feeling really like you haven't got much confidence, to kind of like open up your chest and your body, and that actually sends messages to your brain of confidence and not being scared.
Well, it boosts your testosterone. So it's Amy Cuddy's theory of
Cuddy,
the power
that's it.
Pose.
Yes.
So if you stand with your arms out to the sides or up above your head, that actually that can give you a kind of immediate confidence boost.
Is it the warrior pose, she calls it, or something? She's got a
Isn't
name for it.
Supermanish one.
Yeah. Superman.
She's got, I think there's a few different ones, but generally they're open power poses.
Yeah.
And the point, but I think there's two points about that really. So there's the Amy Cuddy research, although I think there was recently a piece of research that actually disproved it.
But
anyway,
really?
I mean, that's just the nature of research. You can always find something to prove and something to disprove. But anyway, I like it and I think it does work.
I do too.
Psychologically, if not hormonally. But anyway, what she said is that the power poses increase your testosterone and decrease your cortisol levels. So they not only make you feel more confident, but they also make you feel less stressed.
Mm.
And you don't need to do them in the moment, right? So her research is saying, like, go to the loo before an interview, do this pose for, I mean, I don't know how long you can do it before your arms will get tired, but do this pose for 5 minutes and then come out and you can stand completely normally and feel much more confident. And in her research, people were more likely to get taken on the interview if they had done the power posing. But there's a second side to it, which is, if I just stand in a bigger, more confident way, I just look more confident, therefore I look more capable, therefore people are more likely to give me a job. So I think it's a kind of two-pronged thing.
Yeah.
I also think with the Amy Cuddy thing, there's the other point is that you are just taking a moment for yourself, and it's almost like a placebo. It's and that is the so much the point of what we do, is giving women a space to just think about their career from a different perspective. And actually just standing in the toilet for 5 minutes, whether it does reduce your cortisol, raise your testosterone, whatever it does, you are actually taking 5 minutes to just be in the moment. And we are never in the moment. We're always rushing around, and that's stressful and can be confidence kind of smashing in a way, because you just never feel like you're coping. So I just think almost what I like about that is that it just, you're just kind of still.
Mm-hmm.
And that stillness can be empowering in a way as well.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And for mums, it kind of feels like it's a particularly prevalent issue, confidence, you know, whether it's being confident in this new role as a mum, or whether it's going back to work after maternity leave and feeling like I've had 9 months or 6 months, whatever it is, off, and I've now suddenly got to snap back into work mode. You know, people do suffer from confidence as a mum. So kind of, did you guys have experience of that when you became mums?
I think it's inevitable, because I think your entire everything in your life is altered once you have a child. And what we say, and I personally speaking, yes, I mean, you have this life beforehand where you're completely in control of yourself. You only basically have yourself to look after. I'm a kind of relatively kind of not controlling, but I like to feel in control of things. And I think once you lose that, you lose some of your identity, everything changes. And there's got to be an inevitable kind of readjustment period. And if that is happening at the same time that you're going back to work or thinking about going to work, even just being off and being ill and coming back into the office, you know, everything slightly changes. You feel a little bit out of the loop, and that is obviously going to affect your confidence level. What we talk about with children, and we did a brilliant event at the Royal College of General Practitioners, didn't we? I loved that event, and it was kind of a confidence themed event for mothers or fathers. It was parents returning to work, about changing the kind of rhetoric in your head. So thinking about how your children have made you awesome, how they've made you, empowered you, all the extra skills you suddenly have, which we don't focus on. And I think it's like a very female thing to do, is to immediately think about the negative. Like, I haven't been there, and, you know, I've now got a child to look after, and all the negative. Actually, look at all the things you do, how you've become a leader without even realising it, how you can multitask and such a kind of more efficient way, just all these things that having children and working is stressful, full stop. You know, it's not easy managing different kind of demands on your time. But actually, if you can look at it in a positive point of view and think, having a child, I mean, I just feel more mature as a person. You've gone through emotional journeys that you haven't gone through before. And if you can channel that into your work, you can kind of change that lack of confidence, or you can help rebuild yourself. But also accepting that all women feel that way. I mean, it's kind of, I don't think anyone, even the women that return to work, you know, 6 weeks after they've had a baby and straight back on at the boardroom table, you know, there's a front there and there's something else going on inside. So it's kind of not comparing yourself to others as well. And
it's so hard though, isn't it? Yeah. I remember, you know, when my daughter was probably about 18 months old, going into work and just feeling like, you know, everyone, all the other working mums have got it together and I'm just failing massively. But they're all just feeling the same way. And
also your body changes, what you can wear, you know, things like that. I don't think you feel like yourself for about 2 years after you have a child.
And all the hormones are still buzzing around, aren't they? Oh, it's a tricky time, isn't it? Okay, so I really like that tip of, you know, focusing on the positives. What other tips would you have? So if someone's listening and they're, you know, either thinking about going back to work, or they've recently gone back to work after maternity leave, what tips would you give them to kind of tackle the confidence issue?
I think the point that Alice made about not comparing yourself to others is a really, really important point, and you just can't emphasise it enough, because we, especially when we become mothers, we're automatically thrown into this comparison kind of hamster wheel of, you know, oh, my baby's doing this at this age, and my baby, oh my god, my baby's not doing, like, you know,
some
my
of
baby
helpful.
can't like doesn't have a PhD in maths one. You know, it's some of it is helpful and a lot of it is really unhelpful. Oh, she's got her figure back straight away, but I haven't got my figure, you know, my figure's completely changed, or she's gone back to work and she's like totally smashing it and I'm not. And the really important thing is that we are all really, really different. Number one, there are two things that are important. Number one, we're all really, really different. And there are two kind of things that you can, there are two kind of tools that you can use to make yourself feel better about that, or to help yourself understand why, in what way you're different. The first of those would be, I think, defining what success means to you. And it's something that Alice and I talk about all the time. If you are coming from the point of somebody else's definition of success, which we all do, we talked about unconscious bias before, right? If I say, name the most successful person you know.
Oh, I can't think of someone.
But you're probably, people picture someone powerful, maybe very outwardly confident, probably making quite a lot of money, or they think they're making quite a lot of money. And the thing is, that might not be your definition of success.
That's so true.
Your definition of, actually what makes you feel happy and successful might be quite different to that. You know, it might have some of those elements, but it also might be, I want to pick my kid up from school every day, or it might be, I really want to help people, or it might be a whole mix of things that are really different to the person you've called successful. And what you're calling successful is something that you've internalized from your childhood and from society. So it's really important to do some work around, what am I actually trying to achieve? And what that enables you to do is then separate yourself from other people and comparing yourself to other people, because you can say, I'm pursuing my success and she's pursuing her success, therefore I can be happy for her, but I can be not intimidated or feel kind of in competition with that. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is kind of another way of looking at that. And there's this really interesting piece of research. It's quite controversial research, but I think it's really interesting, by a woman called Catherine Hakim. And she talks about preference theory. And preference theory is basically her attempt to explain why do in a developed society where we have equal pay legislation and we have really good access to childcare and we have access to contraception and all those kind of things, why do you still have women who stay at home and women who work part-time, and a lot more than men, even in Scandinavian countries, right? There are more women who stay at home and there are more women who work part-time. And why do some women choose to do that, and some women kind of go somewhere in the middle, and some women work really, really, really hard? And what she came up with is this preference theory, and it is based on a lot of research, but it is controversial. So what she says is she divides women into three types, and she has, and I really love this theory, and I kind of observe it a lot in women we work with, and in mothers we work with particularly. She has the work focused woman, and the work focused woman is very self-defined, and none of this is a judgment, this is just kind of how you are, very self-defined. So she's very fulfilled by her personal career and internally defined. She wants to pursue her career goals. goals. She may not have children. So, for example, I think, is it Helen Mirren who was like, my career is my child, so I wouldn't have ever had space in my life for a child. Or she might have had a child or have children, but she's really comfortable to outsource the care of those children. She doesn't not love them any less, but she's really comfortable outsourcing them. It's not an issue. As long as they're cared for, that's fine. She pursues her personal goals. Then you have, at the other end of the spectrum, the home-focused woman. That woman's very externally defined, so by her home, her family, other people, and she isn't career ambitious in herself at all. And that type of woman will probably stay at home, or she might work for financial reasons, but in that case, she won't be necessarily pursuing a career, it'll be more a job. And if you're either one of those types of women, which is generally about 20%, they vary across countries, but generally around 20% work-focused, about 25% home-focused, it's actually not that difficult being those types of women, because your focus is really clear, so there's no conflict. And you're probably not the kind of women who are listening to this podcast thinking, oh my God, but you know, she's like doing really well, but she's spending more time with her kid, and I don't know where I should be on the spectrum. And what you are is a dual-focused woman. About 55% of women are dual-focused. And the best way that I can describe it is like a visceral internal pull between your home focus and your work focus. Yeah, you're nodding.
Yeah.
And you know, this is really familiar to us as well. And, you know, you're self-defined. You are ambitious. You want to pursue a great career for yourself, but you're also externally defined, and you want to be there for your family, and you want to be there for your partner, and it's really, really difficult, because there is this whole range of a spectrum of where you can be. And and I think that's really helpful. I mean, there's loads more we can talk about with that, but I think in the context of comparison, that's really helpful, because actually it's almost like being a different gender. So if you have a colleague of a kind of, say, like an NCT friend who went back to work after 6 weeks, completely focused on her career, got a nanny, it's not an issue, she doesn't seem to be conflicted, like, maybe she is, maybe she's not. Maybe, because maybe she's totally different to you, and that's I think really liberating, because then you don't have to compare yourself to
That's amazing. That's incredible. And actually, when you were first describing the different types of women, I thought I was identifying with the career women. And then when you came in with the 55%, I was like, oh my goodness, that is me.
Yeah. And it's really funny, because you don't, I think, always know which one you're going to be. Because when I before I had kids, I was actually really offended by it. And I was like, well, I'm a career focused woman, you know, that this is just basically offensive, and it's pigeonholing women, and it's sexist. And, you know, of course I will care about my kids when I have them, but you know, I was really shocked that when I had kids, suddenly I hadn't realized where my focus was going
to
be.
And also I think that kind of, I think it's all right to have that kind of analysis of women and mothers without, you know, actually pigeonholing women. It's not pigeonholing, it's different. It's good to analyse women and mums and behaviour and how different we all are. I think it's helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly find it helpful, and I think people we talk about it with find it helpful too.
So you guys have got confidence workshops with Karen Millen, kind of around and about different Karen Millen stores coming up, haven't you? So anyone who's listening, are tickets still available to those events?
I think so. So we've already been to Manchester and Birmingham, which were both brilliant. We've got coming up Leeds. We're back in London and Covent Garden.
I think London sold out.
Has it?
Yeah, London sold out, I think, straight away.
So
we're in Belfast next.
Belfast.
Hour. You've got Bluewater.
And Bluewater.
Yeah. Okay, so people can...
You can find the events on our website, under the events that section, or also on the Karen Millen website.
Excellent. Okay, so I've got some quick fire questions for you ladies, if that's okay.
Sure.
Describe motherhood in one word.
Describe motherhood.
I'm gonna go for life affirming. Is that one word or two? Am I allowed a hyphen?
It's a hyphen. It's okay. we'll let it off.
I'm gonna say snuggly.
Oh, that's nice. I love those words. If you could give your 16-year-old self some advice, what would it be?
I think it would be that you always have something to offer. So I started my career from the very bottom. I mean, I graduated in a degree that was nothing to do with my career, and then started as a work experience on fashion magazines, where you are very, it's a very hierarchical structure and you start earning no money with no opinion, and basically you are just a robot who packs fashion bags. And I think that can be, just personally speaking, you really lose... It's not about confidence, it's that you feel that you have no value in that space. And I think that stayed with me even until I was working and had a good role. I was at the fashion writer at the Times, and it was still very hierarchical, and there were people, we call them umbrella, there was one woman who was, we call like an umbrella, what's the full term? Like
an umbrella boss.
An umbrella boss. Well, she wasn't my boss, but she was a more senior colleague who obviously had her own issues, and there's a whole other story there, but who kept us down as the junior mm-hmm. members of staff. And I had ideas and thoughts, and you know, I was ready to pitch things that might not have been taken on, but we were never encouraged to do that, and that really stayed with me. And I think actually, in a weird way, motherhood has liberated me to just say what I want, and I don't feel defined by age anymore, and I wish I hadn't felt so defined, like I'm the youngest in the team, therefore I don't have an opinion. And I think there is no correlation, especially to working today. You know, we've got an amazing assistant, Kira, who is 21, who knows way more than us about lots of things, and that's great because she brings something new to the table, and she's much kind of techier than us, and you know, she's got her finger on the pulse in a way that we just don't have. And I think I want to always feel that she feels like she can voice that opinion and feels valued for that, and that just because she's much younger than us, sadly, that she is less important. And so I think, yeah, I think that would be my piece of advice.
I wonder whether that's a generation thing. So I wonder whether the younger generation, like millennials, you know, and younger, don't have that as much. I wonder whether they feel...
Oh, I think they do. Do they? Such obstacles in their path. I think, you know, getting a job, I think they're constantly told they're never going to own a property. You know, they've got different pressures that pigeonhole them. I mean, from where we're standing, I'm actually a millennial by 7 days because I was born on the 7th of January 1980, which, according to my husband, yeah, I am a millennial, but I am not really a millennial, of course. But I think we look at millennials and think, oh, they've got it so easy. You know, they can become Instagram stars and earn, you know, 100 grand a month by just placing a few. Well, I think it's easy for us to look at them and see, yeah, that they've got it easy. I think they've got a lot of things that make them feel like they aren't good. You know, it's an uphill struggle, and mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily want to be a millennial now. So I just think if any millennials are listening, you know, have the confidence to know that you are just as valid as anyone else, even though you might be 10 years younger than them.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant advice. How about you, Finella? What would you say to your 16-year-old self?
Well, there are so many things that I would need to say to my 16-year-old self, like, I don't know, don't wear crop tops and hipster trousers together.
No, that was a good look.
That was never a good look.
Did you shop in Morgan for your hipster trousers?
I'm a Morgan aficionado. If Morgan revived today, then I would not be able to walk past it because it would make me relive the moments of my 16-year-old self. For career advice, I'd probably say don't be afraid to do the things that you really enjoy. And I think, like, this has, you know, without wanting to be preachy, this has relevance, you know, no matter what age you are. I was really academic at school, hyper academic, and that meant that I was really, really pressured to go into very academic subjects. And actually, but I was also really arty, like I love drawing, I love to make my handwriting look pretty. And I was doing kind of weird A-levels, art, physics, English, French and German, and I was kind of really pressured, like, you know, you have to choose between science and arts, and you're not allowed to do art because then you won't focus on it. Anyway, I was really pressured. They wanted me to go to Oxford, and I did. And I think then when I came to my job, I just allowed the same thing. I was kind of quite passive. I was like, people said, like, you're clever, so you should go to the top law firm, so I'll go. And I just didn't really think about what I actually enjoyed doing. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I really, really, really hate confrontation. Like, I hate it. So that wasn't like a great environment for me at all, and I knew that kind of, but I also just kind of wanted to do the thing that I was being pushed into, and also I think probably the thing that I thought looked successful,
right?
So I think, you know, the advice that I would give to anybody in their career, and I give it to my children already, but I would give it to anybody, is just do the thing that you really, really enjoy. Because actually, we're testament to the fact that if you just do something that you really enjoy, when we started this, we didn't particularly think it was a business. And it turns out that it is, and it's really, really fun, empowering business where we can really help people and have a great career. So I think as long as you do something that you love, you will, and you're good at it, you will find a way to make money from it.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Now, are you ladies happy to show me what's really in your bag?
I've got three things in my bag, because I've got the smallest bag that doesn't even fit my phone.
Well, that'll be nice and quick then.
Do I just get out and reveal?
Yes, go for it, Alice.
Okay, so I've got my keys, which are way too big. Annoying. I've got my phone, too big.
And which is also big, yes.
And then
the smallest town bag ever.
Then everything's disproportionately sized here. I've got a very small purse, which is just crammed full of stuff. But and that's my initials on
it.
Gorgeous. My married initials, which my daughter saw today on my shirt as well. And then I've got an array of discount cards, which I think defines me as a person. I basically have them shoved into every bag, different ones. I never have the one I want, obviously, because I'm disorganised. But I was obviously planning to go to Whistles, Topshop and Liberty's the other day when I last went shopping. That's what I have in my bag.
Wow.
The rest is empty.
That is very streamlined.
Yeah, well, normally I've got a ginormous handbag, but we've had quite a few busy days today. So I just, sometimes I feel much more relieved when I just have a small handbag.
Yeah.
I've definitely through that big baby handbag stage. I'm now back into the big laptop handbag stage. So
yeah.
If I don't need to bring my laptop, I just go minimal.
Isn't that the most amazing moment of the day that you go out of your house without extra clothes?
Oh, it's just the relief is totally amazing, isn't it? Yes. How about you then, Fenella?
Yeah, I kind of need to clear this out. I've got a train ticket from our Caramel and Fair Manchester, which I've used to put a small chewing gum in.
Nice.
Oh my god, this really reflects me as a person. I seem really organised. I seem like the organised one, but I'm actually like in my head and in the background, really, really disorganised. I've got my daughter's hairbrush because I have to do her hair while we're standing outside school waiting to go in because I don't do it in the morning.
And it's a rainbow dash.
It's
hairbrush.
Oh yeah, which she's obsessed
with
ponies. Do you
actually brush her hair with that? That's cruel. That's cruelty against children. It's like, my children used to brush their rocking horse.
Yeah, but she's
horse.
Got no hair. She's got. She's
oh,
not like.
Get her.
Your
I'm
going to
get her.
Hair. Yeah. No, she's. I've got a tangle teaser as well. Okay. I've got a phone charger. I've got a pen. I've got loads of receipts that I need to file. My migraine injection. I've got really bad migraines, so I have to carry that. It's like a kind of like an EpiPen for migraines.
Okay.
I've got cards. I've got dog poo bags because I'm dog sitting my mum's dog. I've got a discount card for the hairdresser.
That's a good hairdresser.
I've
I used to go to the hairdresser.
Three business cards that I haven't yet followed up on from 3 weeks ago, but I am going to follow them up on them because it's really important to follow up on contacts that you make when networking.
So if you're waiting from an email from Fenella, then it's coming.
Yes, I obviously follow my own advice. I have lipsticks. I always wear lipstick. And lip liner, you never know when you'll need it. Eyeliner, never know when you'll need that. This, by the way, my handbag is absolutely tiny.
It's really small. It's like Mary Poppins.
I've got loads of hairbands, more money.
A little pouch.
Oh yeah, some discount cards.
Oh, I see.
Space NK. Yeah.
Excellent.
That's it. Sorry, so that's so gross. I'm
very revealing. Ladies, thank you very much for being my guest today. I'll let you pile everything back into your bag, Fenella.
Sorry.
But yes, thank you. It's been really great to chat
to you
both.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening. I've been getting some amazing feedback from listeners who are getting loads out of the podcast, which is brilliant. You can always tweet me or DM me or email me. I'll put all of my links in the show notes this week. Bye for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.